This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here as always with my colleague, co-host Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. How's the pandemic going on your end?
I mean, it is apparently still raging, and nobody gives a shit. The world is still burning, and we are just, like, outpacing, I think, like, so many other countries in the world on curbing this. My life continues to go on. Everybody I know, like all my friends, family, they continue to quarantine and be good. But seriously, man, I've been invited to a wedding the last week. I've been invited to like a dinner in like last weekend. I'm like, dinner? I'm what? So
a dinner, like I, a oh, Jesus.
Yeah, like at somebody's house, like just our neighbors. And I was like, yeah, I'm not really comfortable. They're like, okay, we'll just drop off food. I was like, okay. But you know, I think people are just fatigued and are wanting to get back to their lives, and a lot of them are doing it.
It is weird sometimes when you see aspects of life or people who are living their lives as if it was not COVID times, and it is hard to keep up the distancing, keep up your routines of isolation when you realize that so many out there are not, and like, well, what's the point? Why should we do this now? And the point, of course, is that you and yours are less likely to get sick, but it's such a weird
We'll be the last
time.
One standing, Susan. I guess that's the point. It's the slowest rapture ever.
I had to go to a crowded grocery store for the first time in probably months the other day.
Oh, wow.
And I came out like feeling like I had a cough and a sore throat. Like, I already have it. It's already happened.
It's happened. Well, I mean, to be honest, like, I gotta get groceries like every 4 days with the amount of milk my kid goes through. But yeah, every time I go, I feel pretty safe. I mean, like, the stores are mostly, you know, it's like at 10% capacity and everybody's wearing a mask and staying the heck apart.
I've gone to stores like that and it feels okay. Like, I'm not paranoid about grocery stores in general, but this one was like almost normal times crowded. And it was definitely sort of like a freak out moment because I hadn't seen that in so long.
Yeah. And no masking or masking?
There was masking. We had that going for us at least.
All right. There's a little bit of a barrier.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about where we are right now with numbers. As of this morning, Johns Hopkins is reporting we are at 177,536 U.S. deaths, which, by the way, is 20% of the reported global death, like, count. Like, we account for 20% of it. We are 4% of the world's population. We're at 5.75 million positive cases. As a lot of you are aware, in the last couple of weeks, schools have started opening, universities started opening. I have two friends who just over the weekend told me that they dropped their sons off at their dorms. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? But I guess everybody's just like, I guess they're just going to end up coming back soon.
And spreading it further.
Spreading out further. University of Alabama just reported this morning that they've had 560 cases on campus. I think they've been open for like a week or something.
Roll tide,
exactly. I mean, there's just, and then I guess my question is, what do you do with those students? Do you quarantine them on the campus? Because that seems to be the only way to make sure it doesn't spread into every other part of the country.
Most likely they travel home and then hopefully quarantine at home, but in many cases probably don't.
Even the travel itself is going to, like, expose you while you're traveling.
Hopefully they're driving.
I feel like we're just at the beginning of just the worst part of 2020, because I feel like cases are going to explode because of all the school stuff and then the election. It's just, I'm really dreading the rest of this year.
Here's the good news. Mask wearing, the data continues to come in and show that it is effective. It can have a very significant reduction in the spread of the virus. It's not foolproof, of course. It doesn't save everyone. It can't stop it for good. But it does seem extremely effective. There was a report out of South Korea where a woman had gone in to a Starbucks who was infected, and something like 27 patrons also got COVID from it. However, the four baristas working there were wearing masks and did not get it.
You're kidding me. So the patrons around her, 27 people got infected.
I was pretty shocked by that by itself. Damn. But the good news is at least wearing.
Did she like sneeze on everybody? That's a crazy rate of transmission. I mean,
it really was she like waltzing around just like
spitting on people,
singing opera? Yeah. And then they had other studies too about like the two. I forget what state was in the U.S. Two hairstylists who saw like between them over 100 patients, but they wore masks, and despite being COVID positive, none of their customers got it. So I do think if we can get mask wearing up to be like 95% prevalent, it would make a real dent in this, and it would make the upcoming flu season less the possible nightmare it might be.
Well, this administration is not going to mandate it. However, Joe Biden in his speech last week at the DNC did say that he would enact a national mandate to wear masks. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure how he's going to enforce that, but like
that's what I wonder.
I appreciate the sentiment. I think that could by itself make a difference, but in terms of actually enforcing it, not so much.
I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, Trump uses his, you know, he threatens states with funding this and that. Why couldn't a Democratic president do the same thing? Like if governors and mayors and if you do not enforce this, then we're going to withhold federal funding for X, Y, Z, whatever hundreds of programs that you get money for. Why can't you use the same tools?
Because we're a republic and ideally the power of the purse should be coming from Congress under the Constitution.
I feel like this is like a national security threat. But okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about any more corona stuff you want to talk about before we get to the RNC, DNC? I wanted to talk briefly about those.
Yeah, well, there is one development this week. Not development, I guess. Well, there's somewhat of development going on in the treatment front. Did you catch the press conference? One day, 1 week ago? I can't tell anymore. On the new treatment being authorized by the FDA?
Are you talking about the plasma stuff?
The plasma. Yeah. So over the weekend, Trump was, you know, tweeting out his feelings as usual and had some particularly batshit tweets about how the FDA or whoever, I think that's how he phrased it, like the deep state. The deep state or whoever at the FDA is like blocking development of treatments for COVID. Which, you know, we just all moved on from that because whatever, it's where we are now. But that is an extremely alarming thing to come out of the president to claim that his administration is somehow like blocking treatments for nefarious reasons. Anyway, within 24 hours, there was an announcement that there'd be a press conference to announce that a new treatment would be authorized, which, well, that was pretty quick. This new treatment being authorized, or at least it has an emergency use authorization, was from convalescent plasma, or as Trump said it, plasma.
Plasma.
Plasma. So convalescent plasma, it's an old therapy. I mean, it's a real therapy in the bigger sense. There are conditions and diseases where it's very beneficial, and it's a known treatment. It's not some kind of crackpot idea. It's real. The question is it real in this case with COVID-19? And that is a much, much more uncertain question. This has been used already. I think something like 90,000 people have already gotten this treatment in the U.S. because under a National Expanded Access Protocol, which is basically a way that lets treatments that are experimental be given to patients. And the Mayo Clinic has done I call this study, we'll get to that in a bit. They've done treatment on many patients with the plasma with the aim of trying to get evidence to show if it helps. Now, this evidence is at best lukewarm. And the week before this whole press conference, the FDA actually refused to grant an EUA, an emergency use authorization, on the plasma therapy because there just wasn't evidence that shows it actually does anything. So this fact that within 24 hours of this crazy tweet, we got this press conference shows that the FDA is bowing to political pressure. Now, the studies that we do have are concerning in that despite the fact there's been a lot of people gotten this treatment, at no point was like a real study done. At no point was like a double-blind study with a control group put together. And which means the data we're looking at is not comparing people who got the treatment and those who didn't get it. It's, for instance, showing people who got treatments at different time periods. So here's like the results of the study in one instance. Patients who got the treatment of the convalescent plasma within 3 days of being diagnosed with COVID had an 8.7% case fatality rate over a 7-day period. However, patients who got the treatment 4 or more days after diagnosis had a mortality of 11.9% over a 7-day death rate, which means that there's possibly some effect going on here, but what they're measuring is like 3 days versus 4 days and how long it's getting treatment. So it could be showing things like if people have progressed 4 days, but like longer in the disease, their outcome is worse, as opposed to showing the treatment's effect.
I mean, I can see how that would make sense, because obviously this is the kind of disease that like people just degenerate like very, very rapidly with time. One day you're like not feeling so well, 3 hours later you're on a ventilator. So that one day could make a big difference, I guess.
Yeah, it's really a drop ball that they did not organize an actual study, given all the opportunities they had to do so. I don't understand why that didn't happen in the first place. And for this reason, this is why people like Dr. Fauci are like, there is no evidence this actually works yet.
I see that. Okay, so there's no study with a placebo, but what about just in general? If people get no therapy, like how does the death rate compare to those people?
They have not done a study of comparable patients.
Okay.
So they just did. They did not look into that at all. They need to.
Yeah.
Being in debt sucks. Credit cards, student loans, mortgages. Believe me, I know all about it. And it doesn't matter what kind of debt. Being in debt flat out sucks. Some of the hardest times in my life when I was a single parent, I remember what it was like struggling with debt, with all these payments and juggling them. Now look, if you're losing sleep over maxed out credit cards or stressed out thinking about mortgage payments or student loans or your rent, Bills.com can help you take back control of your life. The first step to lowering your monthly payments and becoming debt-free is to get a free debt assessment. It only takes a few minutes and it could save you hundreds or even thousands of dollars each month. From debt settlement to personal loan consolidation to student loan or mortgage financing, Bills.com has you covered. They're part of the Freedom Financial Network, which has been in business since 2002 and has settled over $10 billion in debt. So take the first step to defeating your debt. Get your free debt assessment today. Go to bills.com/45th. That's bills.com/45th. bills.com/45th.
At the press conference, despite the fact that this data by itself is already shaky, it gets worse. And FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn, at the press conference, gave this explanation for why convalescent plasma is, in his belief, a big deal.
So let me just put this in perspective. Many of you know I was a cancer doctor before I became FDA commissioner, and a 35% improvement in survival is a pretty substantial clinical benefit. What that means is, if the data continue to pan out, 100 people who are sick with COVID-19, 35 would have been saved because of the administration of plasma. We've seen a great deal of demand for this from doctors around the country.
Yeah, so this is very, very wrong.
Look, I'm not good at math, but even I know
I'm not either.
Right.
Yeah. Like if I know your math is wrong, it's really wrong.
Yeah.
Now, this 35% number of like the case for reduction in mortality, what Hans said it means is that if 100 people got sick with COVID, now 35 of them are going to live who would have otherwise died if they all get the treatment. That's just nothing to do with the actual numbers involved here.
Right, right.
What this would mean, for instance, is it say that you had, out of 100 people with COVID, and there's no treatment, that 3 would have died, then with treatment, only 2 would die. That would roughly be about those 33%, but you know, close enough to the numbers that Hahn was citing, as opposed to Hahn, who, as in his words, as a cancer doctor, thinks that it means 35 people would live. It's incredibly,
I could have been a doctor.
Concerning.
Some bullshit.
Yeah.
All like, I know is if you have any experience like just shopping and doing a quick like check in your brain about like a about a sale price. Come on, like anybody can do this math. This is insane.
But not the guy in charge of authorizing new treatments. Now, remarkably, in the Trump era, Hahn did later issue an apology for his confusion of the absolute and relative risks. But it was like the last tweet in a tweet thread was like, oh, by the way, sorry, I screwed that up.
All right. So, but this was supposed to be like Trump, you know, Trump's big ta-da, right? This is going to be like some really exciting new news to help. Yeah.
This was the FDA scrambling to somehow get back in Trump's good side after Trump tweeted that they're all the deep state.
Yeah.
So
he's really been able to like manipulate every single agency. All right. But other than that, there's no other news on the vaccine front, right?
Things are still promising and moving along.
Is Dr. Fauci still alive? Is he still around?
Knock on wood.
I haven't seen that man in a long time.
Neither has Trump.
Yeah. And I don't think there's been a coronavirus briefing, right? Like, it was like, they were like, we're going to restart these, and then they kind of, like, tapered off or something, I guess.
You know, I hadn't even noticed, but yeah, they definitely have, like, stopped that because apparently it didn't give him the rush he needed, and also he kept saying bad things. Wait, was the QAnon one the last one? No, he had, it may have been the time where he's asked about QAnon, and he's like, yeah, they're good people, they love this nation.
Okay, I only heard about that. I don't know what happened. So why don't you tell us about that one? When was this?
Like this was last week. It may have been the last coronavirus briefing, come to think of it. I had to check on that. But finally, someone asked Trump about QAnon. And they did it in a good... Here's Trump answering a question about QAnon and the Georgia candidate who was recently elected in the primary.
Thank you all for being here, and we'll take some questions. Yeah, please.
During the pandemic, the QAnon movement appears to be gaining a lot of followers. Can you talk about what you think about that and what you have to say to people who are following this movement right now?
Well, I don't know much about the movement other than I understand they like me very much, which I appreciate. But I don't know much about the movement. I have heard that it is gaining in popularity, and from what I've heard, these are people that, when they watch the streets of Portland, when they watch what happened in New York City in just the last 6 or 7 months, but this was starting even 4 years ago when I came here, almost 4 years, can you believe it? These are people that don't like seeing what's going on in places like Portland and places like Chicago and New York and other cities and states. And I've heard these are people that love our country and they just don't like seeing it. So I don't know really anything about it other than they do supposedly like me, and they also would like to see problems in these areas, like especially the areas that we're talking about, go away, because there's no reason the Democrats can't run a city. And if they can't, we will send in all of the federal, whether it's troops or law enforcement, whatever they'd like, we'll send them in, we'll straighten out their problem in 24 hours or less, okay?
Well, at the crux of the theory is this belief that you are secretly saving the world from this satanic cult of pedophiles and cannibals. Does that sound like something you are behind?
I haven't heard that, but is that supposed to be a bad thing or a good thing? I mean, you know, if I can help save the world from problems, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to put myself out there. And we are, actually. We're saving the world from a radical left philosophy.
Yeah, he did not disavow it. He refused to disavow it. In fact, he's like, oh, they're patriots. He doesn't know much about it, he says, which is obviously bullshit. But, like, he's just refusing to disavow this insanity. And worth noting, a few days later, Meadows, his new chief of staff, did the rounds on cable news, and he also refused to disavow QAnon. Because guess what? QAnon is their base. They love QAnon supporters. It's batshit, sure, but like they need that support, they think, and they're not going to push it away.
And I mean, like you said, so in Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is completely deep in the queue, just won the primary. She is terrifying. She's crazy. Yep. She's straight up crazy. And instead of like distancing themselves, like the GOP tweeted congratulations, like the state party did. I don't know if President Trump himself personally also congratulated her.
He tweeted that she's the rising new star in the Republican Party.
Yes, and he's right. He is unfortunately right.
Unfortunately, Trump is correct.
Yeah, she's a complete, she's a racist, Islamophobe. She's one of the worst I've seen emerge, and that's saying a lot. What do you think? Is she going to win this?
Oh, yeah, it's the district where Floyd County is. She's going to win.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And she's the kind who, like, based on her Twitter activity, like, she's, like, she's not just like dabbling in QAnon. She's full on like the Vatican is sacrificing children in altars beneath the, like, beneath
she makes videos about
Rome. Yeah. And she fully believes in the satanic globalist cannibal sex trafficking cults thing. Yeah, it's not pretty. It's pretty bad. Also, you know, did you hear about the Save the Children rallies that went on?
Yes, I did. I saw video footage of one in Hollywood. And you know what's making me angry about that is not just the fact the rally is happening, but also I've seen some media coverage of it calling it a Save the Children rally. That's not what this is.
No, this is very, very alarming. This is like mole children save the children. Like, they're not saving the children from real threats. They're saving them from, like, being raised in tunnels for
Pizzagate.
Their life essences. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, you know, there's like, I don't know how many millions of children are missing from, and they're, I don't know where they think, I, you know.
Yeah, where are these children coming from? Like, there's actual children being taken from their families. We know that at the border. Like, that's not the children they're worried about. Who are these children that they are
concerned about? And where are their parents? And why aren't they saying anything if their children are really missing?
Yes.
Maybe they're part of the satanic conspiracy,
globalist
too.
Globalist cult, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so it could be that the coronavirus briefings halted because President Trump became obsessed with the DNC, which began last week. And real quick, did you watch the DNC?
Hell no.
You did not, Susan?
No.
Really?
Okay. Why would I watch?
I did. And you know what? I'm glad I watched. It was the first time in, I think, three years that I felt like a glimmer of hope. I mean, I know the chances are that the hope will be crushed because this man is going to steal the election. But I did. And I was like, and I mostly was very stressed out for Joe Biden. He's an elder. He delivered the best speech of all 4 days. He really did. He killed it. He's just so, he has so much empathy and so much class. But the whole thing was produced beautifully. The roll call was great. The music was great. I mean, I remember at the beginning of it, people were like, oh my God, this is going to suck. By the end of it, everybody was saying they should, like, we should keep the these conventions virtual from now on. It was that good.
It makes sense. Like, the virtual, it makes sense to do it that way.
In this day and age.
Yeah. Yeah, of the COVID pandemic.
But you might not think that if you watched the RNC last night.
I saw some bits and pieces towards the end. I don't have cable right now, but I had PBS, and they're playing the Klosky bit. And that was some horror show shit right there.
Can we listen to Kim? Can we listen to Don Jr.'s girlfriend?
Oh, God. Oh, God. It was too soon. I got PTSD from that.
America, it's all on the line. President Trump believes in you. He emancipates and lifts you up to live your American dream. You are capable. You are qualified. You are powerful, and you have the ability to choose your life and determine your destiny. Don't let the Democrats take you for granted. Don't let them step on you. Don't let them destroy your families, your lives, and your future. Don't let them kill future generations because they told you and brainwashed you and fed you lies that you weren't good enough. Like my parents, you can achieve your American dream. You can be that shining example to the world. Manifest and be the change in this country that you dream, that you hope, that you believe in. Stand for an American president who is fearless, who believes in you, and who loves this country and will fight for her. President Trump is the leader who will rebuild the promise of America and ensure that every citizen can realize their American dream. Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
Dude, like, she legit was channeling like a WWF heel.
I don't know what that was supposed to be. I've never, like, seen, and I guess it was supposed to be inspirational when apparently as the DNC was going on, and I knew this would be, I'm like, obviously Trump was probably watching and he was like, oh my God, why can't I have that? Why can't they do that for me? And he was making calls every night telling people, I want this, I want this. He had all these ideas. Of course, pulling that shit together the last minute is very complicated. But they did such a great job. And my favorite part of the DNC probably was the very end. It was like, you know, they had like fireworks and these cars spread out and the music was amazing. I mean, come on, Common and John Legend. It was just great. So they asked Trump, you know, what is the RNC going to be like? He's like, oh, it's going to be inspirational and hopeful. And then you've got John Jr. Cocaine was trending last night for a reason.
So I was sitting there. I'm like, wait, he's crying. Why is he crying? What happened to him? And then I checked Twitter. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that dude's on coke. I'm like, oh.
Is that what it is? You think so? Was he just emotional? You
know? According to Twitter, that's what coke looks like.
I don't know enough to know.
Well, we can say something was wrong with that man. Like something was not right. And whether it was him having a good cry backstage before his speech or him like blowing a few rails, I don't know. Something was super wrong. And it was. I guess we're just going to pretend that didn't happen, but that totally happened.
Well, the messaging was interesting. Him and Kim Guilfoyle, both of them had, I mean, other than the crazy shouty bits, had a similar message that was directed very much towards the American people. And it was like, you can have it all. I thought this was interesting. Over and over, that's what Don Jr. repeated. Over and over, that's what she repeated, that, you know, all your dreams can come true. You can have it all the prosperity you want can be yours. It sounded almost like a kind of like a tent revival type of.
Yeah, like it sounds like some prosperity gospel stuff going on.
Yeah. And it reminded me of some of the analysis done about why poor white voters will still vote Republican. It's because they are fed this dream that you could be just like us, right? I mean, like that's part of the draw. So anyhow, it was really interesting. I don't know how the rest of it. And there's a couple of speakers, but I really mostly tuned out and I checked in highlights later. Now it's going to go. And Trump is going to appear like every single day. So yay for that, I guess.
Yeah, because Trump's problem is that he just does not have enough exposure with voters.
Yesterday in the daytime at the RNC, he started one of his rambling talks. And I swear to God, I started listening and then I'm like, I can't do it because it's the same goddamn thing over and over and over. Anyway, in the meantime, Kanye has disappeared from the news. I don't know what's going on with his presidential bid.
Apparently he's off the ballot in Missouri. He did not get enough signatures. So
that's it?
Well, for Missouri.
Okay. All right. So let's move on. We've got three more nights with the RNC. We'll see how it goes. We know how it's going to go. It's going to be a big shit show.
It's going to be full of hope and optimism. What are you talking about?
They're saying Melania is going to give the speech of her life. And she will because dear. Michelle Obama gave a fantastic speech and she's going to copy it word for word. But all the Trumps are speaking, including the Honorable Ivanka Trump. And speaking of which, did you hear about the book that's coming out? Melania's Friend?
I saw there was a book. I didn't hear more about it. What's it going to cover?
Ex-friend. Well, yeah. And she's provided to some outlets, like, she secretly recorded Melania. And that's not a friend. Basically shit-talking Trump and Ivanka. She doesn't like Ivanka. Surprise, surprise. All right. So let's move on. Last week was the Senate hearings with the U.S. Postal Service. What's it called? The Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. So I don't know how long the hearing lasted. I think it was a day. And then this Monday, yesterday, were the House hearings. Now, it hasn't, you noted earlier that it hasn't been like very exciting, but a couple of things that have come out. First of all, this guy knows very little about like the agency that he runs.
Yeah,
he
yeah. Whatever know. Whatever shenanigans are afoot here, it is safe to say that DeJoy is not the puppet master.
He's like, I don't know why certain machines were removed. I had nothing to do with that. But when he was asked, look, 671 machines have been removed, like just in the last few months. Will you reinstall them before the election? He said no sorting machines. He was asked about the price of postage. He does not know.
He asked who did the changes that recently happened under his leadership. And he said he didn't know. And he couldn't get the name. He has no idea why the post office is changing. It's just happening. It's not his responsibility.
You know, I thought it was bullshit until I read the story that was just reported, I think, in the New York Times about how apparently Steve Mnuchin, Secretary of Treasury, is the one who might be kind of behind all these shenanigans. As far back as January, he began having meetings with different members of the Board of Governors of the U.S. Postal Service, yes. But meeting with the Republican ones and not the Democratic ones. And so because they weren't invited to the Treasury meeting. There's not a quorum. Apparently, the Sunshine Laws don't apply, so they don't have to actually report that this meeting took place. But at that time, since then, Mnuchin has had his fingers all up in this. helping to direct the Board of Governors, like, you know, passing along, like, proposed candidates for the position to the White House, like, just deep in it. Now, his, apparently his reason for this is, you know, his Treasury, right? I mean, he wants to cut costs, this and that. Is that legitimate, do you think?
No, that's not how this works.
Yeah, it's not how any of this works.
Like, what we know so far is that the hiring of DeJoy was very outside of traditional channels. It was not through the normal process. He was not a finalist under the very expensive consulting search agency they hired to find them a candidate for this role. He was just magically inserted in after not making the first cut selection. And he apparently went into this interview where he was the one asking all the questions, and they had a joke. They joked at the quote unquote interview that they at least had to ask him something so they could say it was really an interview. So he knew he was getting the job going in there. He does not. He's this, I think it's safe to say this dude is not overly qualified for the role. Whatever's going on, he's not the one masterminding it. That's the one conclusion I think we can safely say based on that hearing.
Yeah. So that's basically it. I mean, the dismantling of the Postal Service continues. I thought an interesting tweet by the U.S. Postal Service a couple of days ago. Because, you know, Trump does not miss an opportunity to continue to talk about how there's, I don't know, 57 million ballots and they're going to be lost. And Trump himself is tweeting, save the Postal Service. Like last week he tweeted, save USPS. I mean, the gaslighting is unbelievable, off the charts. But the U.S. Postal Service tweeted a couple of days ago, I was like, oh my God, whoever did that is going to get fired. That if every single American voted by mail in this election, that would mean they would only have to deliver 75% of their regular annual deliveries. Yeah. Like, so they can handle it is what there's somebody over there saying.
Well, the problem isn't the election mail. The problem is that all the mail is jacked up in general.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Yeah, people are losing their mail. All right, so let's move on. Now, this last week, the Senate Intel Committee report, which has been long awaited, was finally released about all the Russian, you know, Russian stuff with Trump and their conclusions. Over 1,000 pages, a lot of redacted stuff, huh?
It was actually not. It was the redactions were overall. I mean, it definitely less of a proportion that was redacted than was with the Mueller report, for instance. But what was extremely frustrating and was also pointed out by Senator Wyden in his additional remarks or additional comments was that the redactions were primarily focused on stuff that's relevant to today, to ongoing matters, such as the right. efforts by Senator Ron Johnson to launder disinformation from Ukrainian officials allied with Russia in order to politically harm Joe Biden. So all that stuff, all the Ukraine stuff was largely redacted. There was some stuff that was just like, you know, kind of interesting, but not really that relevant and more sensationalist than helpful got redacted. But for the most part, the redactions that I think were most disappointing were the ones that affected the stuff that matters today, the Ukraine stuff and whatnot. Still, this report was thorough. It was well done. It was very detailed. It was a counterintelligence. It's the fifth and final volume in the Senate Intel Committee's review of this, and this one's focused on counterintelligence measures and the harm to America and what we can do going forward. It was obviously the Senate's controlled by Republicans, so the Republicans on the committee had to sign off on this, and they did, which is remarkable because it was a very detailed document. Did not support any of the narratives going around Trump world, did not support the claims about, like, you know, a vast conspiracy to spy on his campaign and all that. It refuted those claims, in fact. But, of course, the Republicans being Republicans, they had to somehow signal their continued support for Trump. So despite having this 1,000-page detailed, exhaustive report into the whole Russian Trump world efforts back in 2016... the Republican members of the committee had a additional comments at the very end that was just basically one page that said no collusion, much fancier terms, in bold. And
wow.
after they signed on to this report that explained in detail all the ways the Trump campaign had welcomed and used Russian assistance, and all the damage and harm it posed to America. But
maybe they didn't read the report. I'm not even kidding.
They had to have read, like, they had to have signed off on all of this for this to happen. Like, that's the thing. This report could not have occurred if they hadn't been fully behind it and agreeing that this needed to be done. So they obviously agree, like, they recognize the problem. They recognize the issues. They're not unaware of it. And yet, politically, they're forced to do this whole Marco Rubio dance of, like, but there's no collusion. And the report...
Let me ask you this. What's the value of this report? What can actually be done with this report? Other than just kind of documenting, this is like an official report now, documenting something. Is there any way in which it can be useful to any of, like, does it matter?
Well, this report actually, its focus was like a detailed list of, well, one, it's recounting what happened. And two, it has a pretty comprehensive set of recommendations for various agencies or private actors. Okay. About how this should be done again. Like, for instance, issues in how the FBI was briefing targets of these international hacking attempts. There was definitely a disconnect between how the FBI was trying to inform the targets of these attacks and how the targets, the victims, were responding to it. And the miscommunication led to things like with the DNC and other groups in that respect, this report's very helpful. It's like, here's where things went wrong. Here's how it could go better. Here's why this was... we did not respond appropriately, and here's how we should try and change communications between FBI and victims of hacking attempts going forward. So it was very useful in that respect. But as the report notes, there's a lot that the report couldn't know and couldn't find out because of the extensive obstruction by the Trump administration. For instance, the Trump administration, the witnesses that they called continuously invoked the executive privilege, which, like, one, they can't, because that's the president's privilege to invoke, and he did not invoke it. And two, they're invoking it for things that happened during the transition, or, like, even during the campaign in some cases, which doesn't exist. There's no executive privilege for the president-elect. But in the end, basically, the Senate Intel Committee concluded that it just had to give up on seeking those documents because, quote, if a subpoenaed witness was a government official and asserted a claim of executive privilege, no matter how specious that claim appeared, the committee was effectively foreclosed from pursuing civil contempt. So they're like, well, can't do shit. But it also noted that the committee had anticipated that it would face executive privilege claims from the Obama administration officials, who they called. And in fact, though, quote, in practice, though, Obama administration officials freely shared their conversations with the then President Obama and each other related to the Russia threat. There was also the whole joint defense agreement issue where the Trump world figures all claim they're part of some secret JDA and therefore can't talk about the JDA or, like, their role in certain... all nonsense. But as the Senate Intel Committee found, they couldn't actually do anything because if they did, the litigation would take forever and would never have been resolved in time for the report to still have any meaning.
So here's the question that I saw raised over and over on Twitter. I mean, like, I saw a lot of people crapping on Mueller after this report came out.
Yeah, Twitter was not happy with Mueller. They're like, oh, Mueller fail. Arr. Betrayal by Mueller. What did Mueller do? Was he like, what was he doing all this time? And yeah, so, like, people were angry after seeing what was very explicit and much more direct in how it was laid out from the Senate Intel Committee report. They're like, what was the Mueller's report doing? Like, what was this coy, vague nonsense? And I think it's just kind of, a lot of that was an emotional reaction to that whole time when everyone's like, Mueller will save us. Mueller will save us. And no, Mueller was never going to save anything. Like, when has a prosecutor ever saved shit? I know. That's me showing my bias. But, like, a prosecutor is not the tool for the job that people wanted to see done. What Mueller did was obey the rules of being a prosecutor. I mean, he was very, very within... He's a drawing within the lines kind of guy. So things like suggesting the president engage in criminal conduct that he couldn't charge. No, Mueller wouldn't do it because that's what the prosecutor's code said he couldn't do. But, like, there's no scenario in which a prosecutor would be able to do what people were hoping could be done. Because his only goal as the special counsel was to find and charge criminal conduct, which, as the Senate Intel Committee's report notes, is really at odds with what, as a nation, we needed after the Russian interference operation in 2016. They talked about how, although criminal prosecutions are, you know, a vital tool and they're necessary, it must at all times be balanced with the pursuit of criminal prosecutions. And quote, "It is the committee's view that this balance was not achieved. Russian interference with the U.S. electoral process was inherently a counterintelligence matter and not one well suited to criminal prosecutions. As a result, the committee found that some of the counterintelligence aspects of the FBI's original Crossfire Hurricane investigation were crowded out by the special counsel's effort to identify, charge, and prosecute crimes. In other cases, nascent counterintelligence efforts by FBI were subsumed by SEO and were neither fully pursued nor returned to FBI until the SEO's conclusion 2 years later." In other words, yeah, special counsel likely interfered and blocked our ability to fully understand what happened in 2016. Because that's how criminal prosecutions work. Like, you have, there's,
yeah, but what is he supposed to do? I mean, like, that's what he was supposed to do. I mean, like,
no, I'm not saying that's Mueller's failure. I'm saying, yeah, this was a consequence that should have been foreseeable. But like,
the weird thing to me is, like, why is it that, like, okay, they're saying that the efforts by FBI were subsumed by special counsel, not returned to the FBI. Like, what is it? What, like, one document, like one binder that's going back and forth? Really? The FBI can't continue to, like, do their, you know, whatever, their investigation and enforcement as Mueller is doing his work? I don't
know. No, because criminal prosecutions are so different from what counterintelligence purposes are. For criminal prosecutions, you have to be concerned at all times about, you know, constitutional rights, about getting evidence in a form that can be used at a trial, about not committing ethical breaches. And the whole approach is just, these aren't like similar things. I mean, they're similar and they're both investigations, but they're not like, you know, two parallel processes. They're just entirely different worlds, where one is your goal is to put someone in prison and the other, your goal is to find out what happened. And in this case, yeah, because the SEO existed and was pursuing criminal matters, that did mean that people couldn't pursue that as a counterintelligence matter at the same time, or else they'd lose evidence, interfere with one another. It's just something you can do as a parallel investigation.
Okay. All right.
So.
Well, somebody got his comeuppance last week for like a couple hours, Bannon.
Bannon. Well, also, we had Kleinsmith real quick on the Durham investigation. Kevin Kleinsmith, the first...
Wait, who is this? I don't even know. I can't remember.
Well, he's the first person to be prosecuted as part of Durham's efforts to investigate investigators. And maybe the last, we'll see. But basically, he's a former FBI attorney. He was charged with making a false statement because he's the one who, in part of a FISA warrant application for Carter Page, he altered an email from someone in the government and forwarded it on and pretended that was what the original email had said. Now, this has been crowed about on Fox News and everywhere, like, oh my God, it's proof that they spied on Trump's campaign. It's proof of, like, misconduct and wrongdoing. But looking at the overall circumstances, no, that's not what happened here. It was, like, but for the record, I'm totally okay with this prosecution. What this guy did was wrong, should not have happened, and was criminal in my eyes. But it just didn't have anything to do with, like, an anti-Trump conspiracy.
You're saying it was just wrong that he made the change to the email. But yeah. I'm looking at the change. Is it really a material change?
I think, yes, it is. He pled guilty, so it's a moot point. I do think they might have had trouble trying to prove it in court. But yes, I think it was material, but not in the way that the Fox News crowd thinks. So this happened in June of 2017 for the fourth renewal of the third renewal, fourth application on the Carter Page FISA warrant. So now, this is like 5 months after Trump has been in office. It's not spying on his campaign. Trump's president. There's already been three previous warrants that were approved. But for the fourth one, an issue came up because Carter Page was going on TV and saying, I'm a source for the CIA. So someone was like, wait, is this dude really a source for the CIA? Go check with CIA. Go find out. Mm-hmm. And then the problem is the word source is really confusing. And there's a lot of like conflicting terms between various agencies. The actual email that was forwarded to Kleinsmith that he then changed and forwarded on, it originally said that Page was an operational contact, or OC. And what Kleinsmith did was change it to say that Page was an operational contact and not a source, which basically was him being too lazy to get a clear record and just wanted to
Right.
Make it obvious, like, okay, yes, he does have contact with the CIA. He was an operational contact, which means, like, he would be debriefed on his interactions in Russia. He wasn't given tasks. He wasn't given jobs to do. He wasn't asked to do anything. But he would agree to talk to the CIA or other agencies after the fact. Like, yeah, here's what I saw while I was in Russia, whatever. Which makes him a source of sort. And his role as an OC was disclosed, and that was never not shown. It was the fact that clients would change it to specify conveniently and save him time, but not a source. Like, not a real source, just an OC.
Mm-hmm.
So, whatever. It's all kind of dumb. Dude got charged. Whatever. It could be the last one. We'll see. I don't think that Barr...
So he got a plea deal, or like he pled to... Like,
he pled guilty to one charge, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, for all of Barr's flaws, which are many... I think all signs are that this guy is not eager to go on a charging Trump's enemies rampage. Like, he does not seem inclined to want to do that. Trump's pressuring him. But he knows that that's not going to help the overall goal here. So he just seems reluctant to do it. And it's possible it's going to be the last one. I kind of think not, because Trump is not going to take no for an answer, but we'll see.
How that man has the time and energy to remember all of his grievances, all of the vengeance that he needs to exact. It's amazing. We all woke up happy when we saw that sketch of... Bannon in a mask and handcuffs.
I'm a little bit torn here because, like, on the one hand, I never, like, I'm seeing someone get charged with a crime. Like, it's not something I usually take pleasure in. It's not something I'm like, even like, it's a serious matter. Like, even like it's a big deal. It's sad. There's a crime. Like, it's not like a good thing. It's not a moment of like celebration. It's not something that's going to fix anything. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel a little bit schadenfreude. I mean,
accountability is important. So it is. Let's talk about like what he was charged. Was he the only one charged?
He and three others, three of his co-conspirators in this We Build the Wall scheme based on the late 2018 GoFundMe. If you remember going around, the guy raised $25 million to build the wall himself.
That was the, wasn't that the former... Trump's lawyer or somebody? What's this guy's name?
It was a veteran. It's just a veteran. What's his face? Chris Kobach.
Chris Kobach, sorry.
Chris Kobach was involved as an attorney. He was not charged, .. yet. We'll see. But this is the actual information against Bannon and his co-defendants is two charges, one of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and one of conspiracy to commit money laundering. And it's because they raised this $25 million from GoFundMe to build the wall, like, obviously that was going to get abused. Obviously this was always going to be criminal nature. Right. Like, it's predictable. And then
they
said
arrested him on his yacht, didn't they?
Like... Oh, not his yacht. It was on a Chinese exile's yacht. What? Side note, is involved in the whole Broidy scheme, which one day, these days, we have to do a whole episode on Elliot Broidy and why that guy has not been charged. Anyway, put that aside for the moment. One day we'll get into Broidy. His time is coming, maybe. We'll see. As for Bannon, these charges are based on his, like, really actually amateurish efforts to launder money that they were taking out of the GoFundMe money for the wall, which they said would only go to the wall and not go to their salaries. Like, it was just a really, really amateurish operation. I really thought that Bannon would have been good at money laundering. he should be good at. Like, it seemed like a thing that you'd assume he'd be good at.
Maybe he assumed that it wouldn't matter because his people are like in all the positions of power and nobody's going to touch him.
I guess. I mean, maybe, but like they assumed and they knew enough to like want to try and hide things, but they'd text things like, oh yeah, get someone else's company to wire it so no one can see what we're doing. I'm like, what are you doing, Bannon? Like, this is...
We expected better of you, Bannon.
I did. I really feel let down, Bannon. Like, next time, make sure you take some.
Well, he was out within hours, right? He posted what was the bond, like $5 million or something.
Yeah. Well, his petty ass grifting finally caught up with him. But there were people who were talking about how on Twitter and like on cable news about how, oh look, this is proof that Barr's efforts to mess with the Southern District of New York didn't work, and the ouster of the U.S. attorney there, Berman,
right,
didn't affect operations. I came away with the exact opposite impression. This information, the indictment equivalent, really left me concerned that the bar's control over what's happening at CNY is extensive, and that this may have been the compromise case, and that Barr did allow Bannon and his co-defendants to be charged with these like petty ass grifting crimes. But I don't think this is the real criminal conduct here. I don't think this is the serious, the most serious conduct that was involved. And in fact, the stuff that should have been
this
more
particular
important,
case or other cases,
this
other
case,
cases
with this case.
Okay.
So the stuff that should have been a much bigger deal, more than whatever Bannon was doing, has to do with the guy building the wall, the contractor that was used, a guy named Tommy Fisher. Because now this $25 million that was raised, now we know at least like what, $5 to $10 million of it went straight to the pockets of Bannon and his co-defendants. So let's say they have like $15 million left. They did, this group, We Build the Wall, did build some wall. They built like 4 miles of wall. It's now disintegrating, by the way. At a cost of $50 million.
Oh my
So where did that other like $35 million come from?
Right.
The guy who built the wall, Fisher. Mm-hmm. Now, why is Fisher spending $35 million of his own money to build these 4 miles of wall? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, coincidentally, I'm sure it's a coincidence. Entirely coincidence. No, it's not at all coincidence. This dude has gotten $2 billion in government contracts to build the real wall, the government wall. And Trump has personally and aggressively intervened in the contracting process to insist to both the U.S. Army Corps and DHS officials that Fisher get this contract, which is insane and alarming on so many levels, even aside from the Bannon grift. And you add that in, and what you have is a case of a contractor giving $35 million to help the ex-campaign manager of the Trump campaign engage in this grift.
Insane.
And then have the president personally intervene to give him $2 billion in contracts for this wall building, contrary to the actual like procedures for how it's done, despite the fact that this guy was disqualified from contracting because his proposals were, like, one, not sufficient for the requirements, and two, not competitive in price. This is an insane scale of, like, public corruption, and there's not a word of that.
If this was a compromise indictment and that's the extent of control that Barr or interference that Barr has been able to do over there, does that mean that even if Steve Bannon tomorrow were to be like, I am singing like a canary, I'm going to blow this thing wide open, I'm going to tell you the truth, that it wouldn't matter?
Why would he need to sing? We know they have all of their emails and communications. We know they have lots of information about what's going on here. There's no chance investigation wouldn't have covered Fisher's activities. And yet Fisher, as far as we know, is not even mentioned in the complaint. In fact, however, there isn't a not, there's a like a contractor A, whatever they call it. So there was a contractor who helped the money laundering occur. And the only known contractor is Fisher. So he could have actually been identified in the information as having engaged in criminal conduct, yet he's not named. And there's no reference to his involvement in the real quote unquote wall contracts. But it is basically impossible to imagine a scenario where this was not an influence operation, where it was, I mean, like, seriously, like, Fisher's giving $35 million to build a wall for Bannon and Co. And he's never once like, hey, y'all should maybe use your connections to Trump to put in a good word for me. Mm-hmm. Of course that happened. Yeah. So we have like lobbying. I mean, the lobbying violations are obvious. The laundering by Fisher is obvious.
And I personally also still do not understand how private money can be used to build, like, government property.
It's not building government. I mean, you can get stuff to the government. Basically, they bought some land and built a wall on it, which is legal. You can do that. And then they're just calling it the official wall.
And so they bought some land on the border.
Yeah, and they built their wall. And you can do that. Like, that's, there's nothing. They got the permits to do it. Okay. Maybe they bribed an official to get those permits. Who knows? I want to check into it now. But, of course, the wall is falling apart anyway, so it wasn't even, like, a good wall of 4 miles. But, like, this is, like, terrifying that this sort of influence operation is happening. And as far as we know, it's just being shut down. Because what Bannon did is bad. What Bannon and his co-defendants did is serious criminal conduct. People were defrauded. But, like, okay. Seriously, like, the people who gave money to this group, like, really didn't think that Bannon and Co. were gonna take some money as a salary. Of course they were. Like, it's still fraud, but like, it's not the most egregious fraud out
there. I haven't really seen any outrage from the folks who donated, though. I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, the victims of this crime, I'm not sure would call themselves victims. Like, this is not...
Yeah.
This is...
Also, I don't care if they lose their money, they're assholes.
Yeah, like, no one cares if they lose their money. Like, it's kind of... It's not questionable, it's the wrong word for it, but, like, it's not the crime of the century here. It's basically... The money laundering's a real crime. That was some dumb stuff, and that's definitely criminal. But, like, the actual fraud here is... I mean, the victims were willing, and apparently not even, as far as I can tell, no evidence they're actually annoyed by it. So the real issue here is that public corruption angle, and yet we may never hear another word about it.
Maybe. Maybe this is something that, I mean, a new administration could be like, oh, we're going to take a look into it now.
Oh, that's true. But in terms of, like, the bar control over the DOJ, I know some people were thinking this could be, like, the preliminary indictment and that maybe more would be coming down. They're trying to get people to flip. Reading that information, I just don't think so. I think this was the compromise where SDNY was going to charge someone. And in the day, they don't really care if Bannon gets charged. So
what I wouldn't do. I would love to hear those inside conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be a really tough decision for them.
Berman, like Mueller, is a by-the-book prosecutor, and he's not going to weigh in on this one way or another. So we have no way of knowing what ultimately happened.
A couple other things happened in court. We've got the Cy Vance subpoenas.
Yep, that's still ongoing. Of course, Supreme Court ruled that New York could subpoena Trump's tax records. So they continue with that. And then Trump immediately responded and argued before the trial court, the lowest court, that, okay, well, maybe there could be some subpoenas against me because that's what the Supreme Court just said. But this one is, you know, overbroad and improper and can't be done. The trial court said, oh, no, hell no. Nope, try again, go away. So then, of course, Trump appealed. So that's going to the Second Circuit beginning of next month. So, you know, we could probably spend a few more years going back and forth between Supreme Court, trial court, appellate courts until this actually gets resolved one day in, like, 2023.
Oh, my God. Well, in the meantime, the New York Attorney General has also opened an investigation, right? Or have they actually brought any charges on this?
Well, this is the New York AG. This is so the Cy Vance, so the subpoenas that were on for Trump's tax records, that was part of a criminal investigation. That was for a grand jury contemplating criminal charges against certain individuals, possibly likely including Trump. The New York Attorney General suit we found about earlier this week is civil in nature. It's an investigation by the New York AG into possible like tax avoidance and other issues by the Trump Organization. And as part of that, they have sought records from the Trump Organization, looking into a few of Trump's properties, namely his 40 Wall Street building, the Chicago Tower he built, and a property in Bedford, New York, called Seven Springs. And this, the motion they brought this week was to compel production because, so far, surprise, surprise, the Trump Organization has not been forthcoming with documents. Who could have seen that coming? Yeah, so this investigation has to do with the loan fraud, potential loan fraud, and the tax avoidance. And for me, the most interesting part of it was that apparently Alan Weisselberg, who's the CFO of Trump Organization, did agree to an interview with the New York AG. And before this, the Trump Organization had refused to produce documents about various tax and loan issues by saying, oh, CFO Weisselberg will tell you all about it. He can confirm that we paid those taxes. He can confirm that we did all that stuff legally. And they get to this interview with Weisselberg, and he under oath says, like, oh, no, I have no knowledge of that. I have no personal knowledge of that. Cannot confirm any of this. So their attempt to dodge producing documents obviously backfired, or didn't backfire, it just flopped. So now the AG is pursuing the documents themselves. And here's why this is interesting, because the stuff they're looking into is stuff that I have been wondering about for a long time and kind of figure we never get answers for. But in particular, the Chicago unit acquisition mystery may finally get resolved. This is that weird entity created in 2006, and that we know from Trump's FEC disclosures, he owes $50 million or more debt to, and we don't know who or what or why. And it's bizarre because Trump owns this company. So how does he have a $50+ million debt to a company he owns? What it likely has something to do with is a time when Trump's Chicago Tower starting to fall apart. He owed about $150 million to a group of creditors, main one being Ladder Capital. And for some reason, in a bizarre sort of a agreement, Ladder agreed to let Trump buy out, pay off this debt for $48 million. Now, it's a $150 million debt. Trump gets $48 million, pays off the creditors with that, and the creditors are like, cool, that's fine. That's all right. Mm. Which makes no sense. But assuming it happened that way, which I have doubts about, assuming it did happen that way, that means Trump had $100 million in income. A forgiven debt is income for tax purposes.
Right.
So Trump should have paid taxes on $100 million. And what may have happened is that instead of doing that, Trump used the Chicago Union Acquisition Entity to sort of launder the loan forgiveness and basically park it away and claim that the loan still exists and therefore was not forgiven. And that this entity exists solely to have on paper a debt that obviously it's never going to get paid. Now, that's the most, probably the most plausible and more boring explanation of what happened. Now, it's still criminal because he's still tax avoiding. What I'm curious about is if it really was a forgiven debt in the first place, because it seems bizarre to me under the circumstances that Ladder would have agreed to just write off $100 million. Either way, the New York AG is looking into it, and, you know, maybe by 2023, we'll have an answer there, too.
2023. This is the investigation in which Eric Trump just said, I refuse to comply with subpoena, right?
And implied that he was, like, invoking the Fifth. So there's a couple other issues that the AG is looking into, and they're being the Seven Springs property, which is Trump's, like, decrepit, crumbling mansion, which he bought for $7.5 million in the late 90s, and now claims, for purposes of financial records and for purposes of seeking loans, apparently, claims is worth $291 million.
I was going to say, oh my God.
Yeah, he also claims that when he gave some of the land from this mansion away to a nature conservancy, it was worth like $21 million, and he claimed that's a tax deduction, when the whole property was not worth $21 million. Like, seriously, this is not even a real, like, place. Like, you can't live in the building. It's that falling apart. Like, Eric and Don Jr. used to live in, like, the cottages on the premises during the summers because those were operational. But the rest of it is just kind of a decaying mansion.
Where is this located?
Bedford, New York. It's the one where when Trump, when Gaddafi came to the U.S. Oh. for UN, okay. Trump, like, made money by letting there. Gaddafi stay in a tent in this mansion of his.
So. Got it. Okay.
Anyway, it's been a big week in Trump financial records news.
We got to talk about the Republican Party platform. We didn't talk about this at the top of the show. We talked about the RNC, but this was just released yesterday, right? Can we please talk about this? And I think this is a fitting end to the episode. Shocked? No. Okay, can I just ask you how you understand this? Is this them just saying, we just give up? There's just no point. Whatever Trump wants, we got it. Or is this them saying, he's not going to win. We're not going to the effort. It doesn't matter.
It's not that. I think in some respects, it's actually a recognition of reality, which is that the platform doesn't matter. The policy doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. So why pretend? They're just cutting to the chase because all that matters is what Trump wants and what Trump wants to do. So why even waste time and resources and energy fighting or arguing and baiting within your own party on like a pro forma policy statement when end of the day, everyone involved knows it doesn't matter. It's what Trump wants to see happen. So well,
that's the one page resolution right there. Resolve the Republican Party has and will continue to enthusiastically support the president's America First agenda. That's it.
That's it.
And they will adjourn without adopting a new platform until 2024.
So insane. The Republican Party now literally is the party of Trump. Not only are like half the featured speakers at the convention Trumps, are Trump's girlfriend, right, Don Jr.'s girlfriend, to clarify. We also have the platform, which is actually whatever Trump wants.
You know, it's not going to go away after Trump. You know, Ivanka and okay. Don Jr., it's just not.
So I had the horrifying realization, I think it was like a week or two ago, I was talked to my husband and I was like, wait, what? Like, okay, assume that like somehow Biden wins and Trump just accepts it and there's, you know, a smooth transition of power. That doesn't mean Trump's going away, because if that happens, he's just running for 2024. We're never going to be free of this.
The chaos hell. Yeah, that's what I think. I think we're never going to be free. I feel like the chaos is here to stay. Through him, like, through his kids, it's just here to stay.
Even if he loses, he's not going anywhere. He'll be running for 2024.
You really think so? Unless he's prosecuted for something, unless he cuts a deal, and unless he runs off to Russia or Saudi. I mean,
well, if in some respects, maybe he has to run for 2024 because then he can claim political persecution. If he's not still a political actor, then he can't claim.
Don't give him ideas, Susan.
I think he's already had these ideas long before I'm putting them out there.
Yeah, I got to get my Canadian like immigration in order. All right, well, thanks so much for the update, and continue to stay safe, stay away from those crazy ass stores.
Yes,
and all of you do the same. Stay masked, stay home, and we'll be back in
2 weeks.
All right, take care,
see y'all then.